This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. The Wisconsin legislature is wrapping up another year with the conclusion of its session this week. 2015 was full of legislative changes to state government and government agencies, as well as other social issues that will continue to be topics of debate in next year's legislative session. Various perspectives on the session will be shared in this hour, beginning with those of Democratic State Senator Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse, who this year found herself adjusting to the role of Senate Minority Leader. She visited with Wisconsin Public Radio's Hope Kerwin.
It's been a year that we've gotten under our belt, and so I certainly feel like I have the leadership legs underneath me. It's been really a whirlwind of the last 12 months, and obviously the honeymoon didn't last long that we went in January and February with changes to right to work and prevailing wage, and the budget was then on the horizon as well, and so strategizing with my senators on the Finance Committee as well as the Assembly Democrats and the Senate Democrats about sort of what we would hope to build a better budget for Wisconsin to look for. And then this fall wrapping up with, I think, really a missed opportunity to do some things that were real in this state to help with working families, to help with many families who have received the unfortunate news of pink slips and layoffs. We have seen over 10,000 Wisconsin workers be affected by outsourcing and business closings this year alone in Wisconsin, compared to 6,000 workers in all of 2014. So the trajectory is not the right one that we are on. It is on a downward trajectory. And we really missed opportunities, I think, to work with, to deal with college debt, to work on skills gap, workforce development, jobs, the economy, the one issue that everybody, Democratic or Republican, campaign on and talk about, retirement savings and things. Instead, we're dealing with limiting access to health care by defunding Planned Parenthood. We're banning life-saving medical research. We're eliminating the Government Accountability Board. We're increasing special interest influence in our special elections, bringing back the old system of political patronage, and exempting politicians from John Doe investigations. And as I travel around western Wisconsin and I'm on Main Street, those are not the topics that people are talking about, and that they're concerned about expansion of Medicaid in Wisconsin, so health care and health insurance for family and neighbors, that they are worried about transportation and the potholes and the roads that we have, the lack of broadband and connectivity in rural parts of the state, and our rural schools, our public schools.
And I definitely want to get back to a lot of the issues that you touched on. But recently we've seen Republican leaders, they've said that they wanted to improve relations between political parties. Are you seeing any of those changes of improved communication between Republicans and Democrats?
Well, and sometimes as we go into the election year, so 2016, that the majority party would like to soften themselves up as they go back before the electorate and ask for votes from voters in Wisconsin. And so I think this first year we have seen a very, like I said, a hard right, narrow agenda. And now they want to soften themselves up as they go before and look at some of these other issues. And I want to believe that they want to work with Democrats from the get-go. Democrats this year, we've been talking about the need to reform WEDIC, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, that they have been a failed agency over the last 4 years with loans and economic taxpayer dollars being given to businesses that have closed, that have outsourced. And so that is a very unstable agency. And I think I know it is ripe for reform, that they have had three stinging audits done to recommend things that need to be changed there. And so that is something that we have talked about for several years as Democrats, what we need to do to improve WEDIC and really connect those dollars with businesses and small business and entrepreneurs in the state to help with new ideas and job creation. And, you know, they were AWOL when it came to the news of Oscar Mayer closing, that there was no outreach to Oscar Mayer back in the summer when changes were going to be seen on the horizon. So I think part of it, you know, the governor ran for president for 70 days. I think, you know, he obviously took his eye off the ball for several months leading up to that. That was a distraction. I think it was a distraction to the majority party having the governor campaigning for president. And we just need to get back to basics in this state, that is what people want us to do, is get back to basics and look for ways to broaden prosperity in the state for hardworking families.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Oscar Mayer. Do you feel like the state government could have done something to prevent Oscar Mayer leaving Wisconsin?
Well, we're going back and seeing very little contact was made between the administration and leadership at WEDIC and with Oscar Mayer. And, you know, now the governor is saying, I'm going to go in there and talk to them. I mean, the decision has been made. This is far too, I mean, it's too little too late. And others in the food industry, when this merger happened, they saw things on the horizon, the things that in other states where this was happening, reached out and looked to see if there were tax credits or programs that could help Oscar Mayer with what they needed, and in Wisconsin it was silent, and I think that is a tremendous loss for that region economically. I mean, they have just been part of Madison and Wisconsin for over 100 years, and so I think, I mean, when I say it's a missed opportunity, that is an understatement. That I don't know who fell asleep at the switch, did not initiate outreach to see what can we do. Now I guess we have to look forward and say, you know, how can we use this plant in the future? How do we retrain these employees? How do we have existing employers who have job openings reach out to Oscar Mayer employees and get them retrained for whatever industry that they're in that they have job openings for? But I definitely think that this was a huge loss, and that we should expect better from our job agency in Wisconsin.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we are talking about the 2015 legislative session, the biggest issues from the past year, and what to keep an eye on in the next session. We're here with Democratic Senator Jennifer Schilling, the minority leader for the state Senate. Now turning our attention maybe more toward the western side of the state, what do you think has been the most influential piece of legislation for western Wisconsin this session?
Well, right now, actually, we are working on something, both Representative Billings and myself, on rail safety. And so obviously, you know, timely with some of the derailments that we have seen most recently in Alma, in Watertown, here in Wisconsin. But this is something that probably over a year ago, when the word came to the community and in the neighborhood that I live in, that second rail was going to be coming through La Crosse, that there were several citizens who came together for that grassroots organization of cars, citizens advocating for rail safety, and meeting with policymakers and with Department of Transportation folks and the rail company to say, look, if this is coming, what can we do to make sure that we are emergency personnel are trained to make sure that neighborhoods are safe, that there's evacuation plans, that the emergency management folks have things that they're notified about what materials being carried through these on the cars as they come through. So actually, Representative Billings and I are working. She has will be introducing it in the state assembly. And on the Senate side, I'm working with the chair of the Transportation Committee to have support there to introduce our rail safety legislation, because we have seen over 30 crashes since 2013 and derailments across the country. As we look at what we can do, much of this is regulated at the federal level. So what we can do as a state, we are looking for providing more state rail track inspectors through the Office of the Railroad Commissioner and working with him so that there are individuals that will be out and inspecting the rail crossings, inspecting bridges, and just looking at that infrastructure. I think that's something that we can do. Also requiring railroad companies to submit prevention and response plans to the state so that we have something on file. So if something happens, we jump into action immediately, and that there are these steps that will be taken as far as notification and engaging the local elected officials, as well as the responsibility of the rail companies, looking to provide training for local emergency first responders along the railroad routes. And that is something that, as the second track came through La Crosse, Burlington Northern stepped up and said that we will, at expense to the railroad company, that we will train local first responders. We will provide a foam truck, so we've got the equipment that is needed. We did not have that in the La Crosse area. So in communication, and some of this is, you know, is done as they're negotiating with the city and the mayor and things like that, as far as kind of the responsibilities that the rail has coming through our community. Looking to provide guidelines for coordination and response timeliness in the event of a derailment. And then finally requiring the Office of the Commissioner of Railroad to submit a report to the legislature on emergency preparedness, assessing training needs for first responders, and really the inventory of both public and private resources that are available in the event of a derailment. You know, it's important to recognize that, you know, freight rail has been an integral part of our economy, and in La Crosse, it really has been part of our history and identity since the earliest days. And so, speaking with my colleague, Senator Feinhout up in Alma, she was out at that derailment site several visits, back-to-back days, and was pleased with the notification, pleased with the information that was shared with her community. So there are, you know, there are good things that we can talk about of it's been executed, what did we learn from it, and we can build on those successes, but also if there are shortfalls or shortcomings, what we can do better in case something does happen in our community.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you obviously mentioned Representative Billings, you know, introducing another piece of legislation in the Assembly. You're working on a piece of legislation. So obviously, you know, these railroads are in your community, are in your district. And do you feel like lawmakers who are not, who maybe don't have rail presence in their communities, that they're paying attention to these issues as well?
Well, and that's kind of the beauty of the rail network, that it really does probably touch all of our communities, if it's not, you know, Burlington Northern, or it's Canadian Pacific or others. So I think all of us can identify with rail and transportation coming through our districts. Those that have had derailments in their communities can identify a little bit more closely. Those who maybe live near a railroad track and can see that increased traffic that is happening, can see those tanker cars coming through, obviously have kind of a firsthand experience. But again, this should not be a partisan issue. It's not a Democratic or Republican issue. And I think in order to make the proposal reality, we do need to be working with Democrats and Republicans to get this through. And that's something early on when I became the minority leader, when folks asked where could I work with the majority party, I immediately pointed to transportation and certainly our roads. We have a left lane and a right lane on our highways, but it should not be a partisan issue. And so transportation has been one of those issues that I've wanted to extend an olive branch and say, what is our long-term sustainable ideas and policies for transportation in this state? And so obviously, rail is part of that, and more, unfortunately, if you know, more and more derailments are happening, those legislators can identify with it, that they have had contact with their local officials. And at the federal level, where much of this is regulated, both Senator Tammy Baldwin, Congressman Ron Kind is working on this as well. So in tandem, if we can work as a state and federal elected officials to help improve notification and education and just practices of these issue of this product coming through our communities, I think that that helps all of us. So I'm not looking out just for my neighbors here in La Crosse, but looking out as far as throughout the 32nd District, because the rail goes right along the Mississippi River. I've seen many, many trains that are just kind of stacked up waiting to go because of the log jam. Some of those river communities say, if there's a derailment, how would we evacuate? That we are kind of caught between the bluffs and the river. How do we evacuate? So all of those experiences and working with local elected officials to get that information out is important. I think that that is a well thought out piece of legislation that we really are looking for bipartisan support to do something to improve rail safety in Wisconsin.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the 2015 legislative session, the biggest issues from the past year, and what to keep an eye on in the next session. We're here with Senate Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling. There was a local news organization that recently reported that La Crosse County alone has $68 million in unfunded needs for transportation projects. So are roads, you know, something on the radar for the legislature?
They definitely are, and they need to be. And there's a group, the Transportation Development Authority, the TDA, which is a transportation-related group that encompasses engineers and road builders and many in the road building industry, they are putting forth and working with Wisconsin Counties Association, working with the League of Municipalities, working with legislators and policymakers to make road funding a priority as we head into the next budget. And their campaign slogan is just fix it. We have had study after study and blue ribbon commissions that say, look, we have 71% of the roads in Wisconsin are in disrepair. We have like the third worst roads in the nation, and that we need to do something. That years ago we did away with the automatic indexing of the gas tax to help us fund transportation maintenance and building. We've done away with that, and we never kind of supplanted that with a reliable source of revenue. And so looking at, there are ideas out there about the gas tax or going back to automatic indexing, toll roads, license and registration. All those ideas should be on the table for a conversation. Certainly this is the right time to do it, since we're not in the middle of the tick-tock of a budget clock and kind of not being able to move forward on other issues and kind of holding it hostage because the transportation is kind of the sticky wicket. So here in western Wisconsin, we did see that the DOT had announced several rounds of road delays, including five major projects in southeastern Wisconsin and dozens of local projects across the state. And so by pulling back on the amount of bonding or borrowing the state does, that has an impact on these projects. And I've got community leaders from Cashton to Prairie du Chien to La Crosse County here who contacted me and concerned about the delays of those road repairs and infrastructure improvements. So bonding is not the answer. We can't just continue to borrow. That's just not sustainable. And so Iowa came together in a bipartisan effort and looked at a solution. I hope we can do that as we get into the spring, talk about this next summer, and then as we prepare for the next round of budget, that even the DOT the secretary had a blueprint for transportation and had ideas and suggestions, and we need to look at that. So it's not that there's a lack of ideas out there. There are plenty of them. It's just the lack of intestinal fortitude to be willing to do something and act on it. And granted, many of my colleagues, when the governor was running for president, said we can't offer any of these ideas because the governor says he's going to veto them in the budget. And we just are not willing to go out on that branch if he's going to saw it off. Well, the governor's back. He's not running for president. We have transportation is coming to that crisis point. And if it's in southeastern Wisconsin and doing the exchanges down there where so much of our state's commerce goes through those routes. But as an outstate and rural legislator, I say, look, you know, our roads are important too. Our projects are important as well. And the roads and bridges that are in disrepair, that hurts us economically as well. And so to make sure that the rural part of the state is also being looked at for those infrastructure improvements is critical.
Returning to more of a reflection of what's been happening this past session, you know, the potential removal of the Government Accountability Board has been a dividing issue this year, and it's caused the legislature to go into special session. You know, what are the biggest changes that this bill will have on how state government is held accountable?
Well, and this is one of those instances of no one has ever contacted my office to put forward legislation, ask me to support disbanding the Government Accountability Board. The Government Accountability Board was born about 8 years ago, strong bipartisan support. It was created after caucus scandals that had leaders of both parties investigated, and some were, you know, sentenced to go to jail. And so we said, look, let's put together this Government Accountability Board that will oversee elections and will oversee ethics in Wisconsin, because we had two separate agencies that did that. But really, I see it as a distraction about some of these issues at hand with businesses, clothing, and family wages are stagnant, that we are now moving away from that very successful nonpartisan oversight structure. And we are now allowing Governor Walker and Democrats and Republican leaders to appoint political people to this board. Right now, it was six retired judges, so they are nonpartisan, impartial, fair judges that would oversee these issues and complaints and render decisions. You know, I will trust a retired judge any day of the week over a politician. And so I think it's really a mistake that we're moving away from those six judges. given the attacks on open records and high-profile criminal investigations, it is clear that we need more accountability and not less. And so I'm concerned about the makeup of the board, but also I am concerned about the timing of this, July 1, this new agency will be up and running with these appointments, an interim person to oversee the agency. We are just months away from that November 2016 election. We're huge voter turnout, presidential election, and legislative races on the ballot. And I just worry about that ramp up and of that. We've seen the problem with WEDIC. 4 years into the making, this agency is still stumbling. And to think in a three or four short months with the design of the ballot, with assistance to our clerks, municipal and county clerks leading up to the election, Government Accountability Board is their lifeline for technical assistance. And I have so many clerks who have called me and said, please do not disband the Government Accountability Board, that they've had audits that demonstrate they are doing good things, that we've had an unusual amount of elections between 2011 and 2012, a sort of volume with those recalls and things like that. And yes, there have been decisions that both Democrats and Republicans had, you know, asked for from the Government Accountability Board that we didn't like. And I didn't go to Madison to go change the Government Accountability Board and disband it. They're the referees in our elections and in our ethics. So I think in order to do this, I think it's just really disappointing. Again, it's trampling on open government and fair, clean, good government in Wisconsin. And again, this is not something that somebody ever stops to talk to me about at a fish fry as I'm, you know, eating with my family or something. So I think it's really disappointing. I think, you know, as Democrats, we have unveiled our own agenda that we would like to be working on, Badger Blueprint. It would focus on growth and innovation and opportunity in Wisconsin. None of the things that we are dealing with this fall would fall under those opportunities and growth and innovation. So again, it seems very petty because the Government Accountability Board was at that center of some of the John Doe investigations under the governor. He had unflattering headlines with John Doe 1 and John Doe 2. And I think this is just very petty getting back to an agency that some feel unfairly targeted some politicians.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, you know, this year is going to be an election year. We're coming up to it. Another issue that's, you know, part of this special session is the campaign finance reforms. You know, with expanding contribution limits and loosening information requirements for campaign campaign contributions. How do you think these changes will influence the election process?
I think this is almost the most egregious policy that Republicans have put forward and passed very, very quickly with very little input. Campaign finance laws in Wisconsin have been set, you know, probably since the 70s. And right now, at a time that Wisconsinites feel like there is already too much money in politics, Republicans, they want to open the floodgate for corporations and special interests to influence these political campaigns. Most people probably don't contribute to candidates. They probably don't know what the limits are if you would just ask somebody on the street what they are. But we will be doubling those campaign limits that people can contribute to a candidate. So, you know, from in the Senate, it's $1,000 is the maximum. Now we're going to go to $2,000. For the governor, a statewide office, it's $10,000 is the limit. We're now going to go to $20,000. But what is almost more egregious is now the increase in corporate campaign influence and working with those candidates in collusion of ads and money, and it'll be much harder to track that down as well. It's going to permit candidates to work closely with these advocacy groups that don't have to disclose where they get their money from. And so I think disclosure is the key to open government and to transparent government and transparent campaigns, that we should be making sure that people can connect the dots. We're doing away with the requirement that you have to list your employer when you contribute, rather now just give your occupation, which makes it much more difficult for these good government groups, if it's the you know, League of Women Voters, or if it's the Democracy Group or others, to track these campaign giving to candidates and to see who is contributing. We had an example of a railroad executive who was giving money to his employees who then gave it to a candidate so they would exceed the limit, but he was skirting that. That was illegal. And then reimbursing his employees for those campaign contributions. Under the changes that we are now seeing in Wisconsin will become law, it'll be much more difficult to be able to track that and to connect those dots. I just think voters have the right to know. Disclosure is a good thing, and it should be immediate disclosure, and we should not be bringing in more corporate money to these campaigns because you lose control of your own message and you feel like you know your opponent on the ballot, you know who that person is, you don't know who these groups are, you don't know who is behind them, who is funneling money to them, and that almost becomes a secondary but almost a larger opponent for you out there. Is these ads will be coming in and they're going to be negative. People already say the elections are way too negative, campaigns are way too negative, and you're not going to want to turn on the TV or go to your mailbox or listen to the radio, because with more money will come more negativity on these ads, unfortunately.
And so, we've touched on a lot of different issues today with, GAB and campaign finance. We didn't even get to John Doe investigations and civil service reform. But with all of these changes to state government and government agencies, what does this session really mean for the direction of Wisconsin state government?
I'm deeply troubled with the direction of state government, that many of these traditions, values, longstanding, the reputation of Wisconsin government as a clean, open, transparent, progressive state, that it's all in jeopardy. And it will take years and years and years to come back from the damage that is being done right now to our schools, to our university system, to research, to, clean, transparent elections. And it worries me. And I think that there certainly is a fatigue out there as I travel around the state about the last 4 or 5 years under current leadership and the direction that Governor Walker and Republicans are taking this state, that there just is this deep disconnect and overreach on many of these issues. And I just, I think, people want us to be problem solvers. They want us to work together. They want us to work on the big issues at hand. And, right now, like I said earlier, it's back to basics. It's about education. It's about health care. It's about transportation and infrastructure. It's about jobs. It's about helping our small communities and our rural communities, that those students graduate from high school and they probably don't come back to those rural communities for a job. We need to make sure that there are opportunities in our small towns for innovation and creativity, and the broadband and the internet is paramount to that. And so to make sure we've got connectivity in all 72 states so people can locate a business, grow a business where they want to live, and still be connected to the global market as well. So we're going to continue as Senate Democrats to continue to talk about our Badger Blueprint agenda, where we talk about growth, innovation, and opportunity. We talk about ways that we would want to help with retirement savings for people who are at the end of their work career, and make sure that they've got that retirement savings that would be there. We want to help small businesses and entrepreneurs leverage federal dollars. We want to look at college debt. As students are graduating from college and they're saddled with debt, what we can help with them, put a little bit more money in their pocket. We've got two boys. I know the expense of childcare, helping middle-class families with a tax credit for childcare, the importance of early childhood development, skills gap, and address that. So we've got, this blueprint is a positive, forward-looking document that we're going to continue to talk about. And as I look at 2016, those are the things I'd like to be talking about and coming to some sort of resolution on our transportation dilemma that we have here for long-term financing for Wisconsin. Not some of these really divisive, like I say, just narrow issues that we are working on that people just can't really relate to that we're working on in Madison. And so we need to bring people together. We need to look at prosperity for everybody and opportunities for hardworking families, but also security for those who are retiring and our aging loved ones and family members when it comes to long-term health care and services that they need as well.
Wisconsin State Senate Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling is a Democrat from La Crosse, representing several western Wisconsin counties. We turn next to State Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who represents constituents in the southeast corner of the state. WPR's Hope Kerwin asked Voss what the plans are to address some of the transportation construction needs in Wisconsin.
Yeah, unfortunately, Hope, that's been one of my biggest frustrations because we have seen that this problem has been coming for a while. It's really focused on a couple things. One, that, of course, is a good thing for consumers because President Obama, early on in his administration, required that all cars and trucks have to get more miles per gallon. Well, Wisconsin is one of the states in the country where almost all of our revenues that we spend on roads and bridges and airports come in fees that are paid into our transportation fund. And that primarily comes from when you renew your driver's license, you renew your license plate, or when you fill your car up with gas. So as more and more folks are getting more and more miles per gallon, that means that our revenues, rather than increasing, have been pretty much flat or slightly declining. So that's not going to get better anytime soon as cars stay more fuel efficient. So we've got to find additional ways to generate revenue. I've been a big advocate for allowing Wisconsin to have tolling. If you look at the polling that was done by Marquette University in Milwaukee on a statewide basis, that was the most popular option when you ask folks would they rather raise the gas tax or cut projects or increase the opportunity to have toll. So, of course, Republicans in the legislature want to find a way to squeeze every penny out of the dollars we have now. So we're going to be auditing the DOT to ensure that every single thing that we're spending our money on is an investment that's worthwhile. But I think once that's finished, we're still going to show that there's quite a bit of unmet need to ensure that we have a high-quality transportation system. Well, ultimately, we're going to need more revenues, and that's where the discussion will begin next session.
And rail transportation has also become an area of concern after two trains were derailed in Wisconsin recently. Is rail safety also an issue we'll be seeing next session?
It is. It could even potentially happen this session. I know that Representative Lee Narrison has been working with some of his colleagues from the La Crosse area to find answers which will increase the opportunity for rail safety. But I will also say it's frustrating, too, and that's why, you know, when President Obama and Democrats have opposed the Keystone Pipeline or other pipelines, it's so frustrating because, of course, moving it by pipeline is a lot safer than having trucks on the road or rail cars moving throughout our state. So I hope it's a multi-pronged approach to have, of course, the rail cars as safe as they possibly can be. And luckily, we know that because they're built to much higher specifications, there wasn't really anywhere near the calamity that could have happened had those standards not been in place. But it also reminds us why we need to continue to have more and more pipelines to make sure that they're up to speed as more and more products are carried through that process.
You know, looking back, especially at the end of this previous session, two big issues were restructuring the Government Accountability Board and changing campaign finance rules. And when I talked to Senator Schilling recently, she questioned whether these issues were actually, you know, important to anyone but politicians and those involved in government. Do you feel like these two issues were a good investment of the legislature's time and resources?
I do, and, you know, actually, Jen Schilling is a friend of mine, so I have a great deal of respect for her, but this is one of those times where, you know, she's not really looking at the world in the same way that I am because, you know, the courts for the past 30 years have been the ones writing campaign finance law. The Supreme Court in Wisconsin, the Court of Appeals, and obviously the U.S. Supreme Court with Citizens United and different cases that have occurred. So rather than having the courts be the ones who are writing campaign law, I would certainly rather have it be the elected legislature here in the state of Wisconsin. So while we might disagree on how important they are, the courts have cried out. One court called our current statutes screamingly unconstitutional. Other ones said they are in desperate need of a rewrite. So while there haven't been people knocking at my door saying, please rewrite campaign finance laws, the courts have been very, very definitive in saying we need to have an update to these statutes to make sure people can comply with them in a safe and legal manner.
And talking about specifically about the Government Accountability Board, I know that the board was previously made up of retired judges, so obviously nonpartisan, and now they will be partisan appointees. How do you think this will affect the board?
Well, I voted for the restructuring of the Government Accountability Board almost a decade ago, and I think I have to admit that I had a false notion that some of my colleagues still cling to, that people are actually nonpartisan. I think we should start instead with the realization that every person in our society has a bias. They, you know, lean toward one way or the other, and that doesn't make them wrong, but it means that rather than ignoring that as a potential flaw in the system, we should embrace it and say, how do we find a way to have equality and balance as opposed to hoping that people will not let their bias show through? We saw with the Government Accountability Board that many times it seemed like the staff were more on a witch hunt to go after an ideology than they were searching out and finding the truth. So the Government Accountability Board, I think, was a failed experiment. We should be adult enough to admit that and say, why don't we accept the facts as we all know they are and create a system that is bipartisan, that is equal, Republicans and Democrats watching each other, to ensure that we have a system that reflects the fact that we have a partisan bias in human beings, but also tries to mitigate that by allowing each side to be represented equally and fairly in that discussion. And I think that'll be a better process in the long run.
You know, you're talking a little bit about relations, you know, between the two parties. And I know that previously, you know, you've talked about wanting to improve communication between parties. Do you feel like communication between Republicans and Democrats has improved?
I think it has in general since we did the contentious reforms of Act 10. You know, earlier when I started as Speaker in 2013, I sat down with the Democrats and our leadership team negotiated what we're calling an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, about how we could make the legislature function better. If you'll notice, over the past 3 years, we've had very few late-night sessions. We've had a more structured, respectful debate. Now, certain times we get off track. That happened during some of the contentious discussions with the Government Accountability Board and the revisions that we're making to campaign finance. But overall, I'm proud of where the legislature is. I think if you ask my Democratic colleagues, they would agree with Republicans that the place is better than it has been. But I also want to be adult enough to say it's not perfect, and we need to find ways to continue to strive to listen to each other's thoughts, and that the best bills, whether they be authored by a Democrat or Republican, have the chance to be offered and debated and hopefully passed into law.
You know, looking at some of the other legislation that was approved this session, there was the approval of doing away with political John Doe investigations. And what was the justification for exempting politicians from these kinds of investigations?
Well, that's not really what happened, Hope. We didn't exempt politicians, but what we did do is, believe it or not, and I didn't realize this until we started doing the research on it, Wisconsin is the only state in the entire country that uses the John Doe process. If you think of watching television where you watch Law and Order or one of those crime shows, they usually have what they call as a grand jury, where a prosecutor goes in front of citizens and has to present the evidence to know whether or not there's enough to indict a person, because that's where the process of taking away liberties begins. And that's what Wisconsin really does not utilize, is that grand jury system. We have a John Doe where the prosecutor, with no oversight from the citizens on that panel, have the ability to call in witnesses, compel testimony, and really force it to all be done in secret, where if you talk about it with even your wife or your husband, you are suspected of breaking that John Doe law, and you could be put in prison, not for the crime you've committed, but for breaking the John Doe. So my preference would have been to get rid of the John Doe in general and do it so that we use a grand jury system like the 49 other states. But prosecutors said that there are some times where you're investigating the mafia, or perhaps there's some real intimidation of witnesses where you want to maintain that anonymity. So we did that. But for crimes such as bribery or, you know, certain kinds of theft or things that might affect politicians, but they also affect average, normal, everyday other professions, they'll all be under the same rules. So it's not special rules for politicians, but it is changing the process for crimes that are certainly not requiring that secrecy like we have today.
So do you think this will have any sort of impact on the way that Wisconsin holds government officials accountable?
I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. So once again, 49 other states use that grand jury process. There are people who make mistakes, commit crimes, and are prosecuted on a regular basis. In Rhode Island, the speaker was indicted for taking bribes. In New York, they were not reporting income from another firm. So, you know, that's a situation just that I can think of in recent, you know, in the last recent months, where people have used that other system and allowed the process to move forward without a John Doe. So I really think that as far as the average citizen is concerned, it'll have the same ability to root out corruption and to root out any potential influence peddling, but doing it in a way that's more normal for the rest of the country and won't result in these politically charged witch hunts like we saw with Governor Walker in the John Doe investigation.
And so, you know, obviously we've seen a number of changes to some structuring of state government. So do you think that Wisconsin is maybe heading in a new direction with the with their state government, or maybe their structuring is shifting?
To some extent, I would say, you know, Wisconsin has always been a place where reform should be happening, and we lead the nation in so many ways. You know, first place in the country that had workers' comp, first place in the country that really went ahead and had a robust school choice program. So, you know, on both ends of the spectrum, I think we are people who like to reform and make government better. I think this is no different. We have had some tough reforms. We've had some bipartisan reforms. This is an example where the campaign statutes hadn't been updated since the early 1970s, when most people who are listening were either young people or not even born yet. So I certainly think that just because something's been around for 40 or 50 years, that's a good time for us to look at it and say, boy, are there ways that we could reflect the, you know, the age of technology, the fact that computers weren't even around? And I think that should happen in every part of state government so that we guarantee the taxpayers the money that they spend to Madison is spent as wisely and judiciously and frugally as we possibly can to make sure that we invest in our priorities like health care and job training and schools in a way that makes us all have more confidence, not less.
And so looking forward to next session, you know, what do you think is the biggest issue going into the new year?
Well, we'll start off again with that budget where, of course, for my preferences, I want to fix the transportation problem that you and I discussed earlier. I want to continue to make sure that we are investing in our K-12 education system. And, of course, I want to guarantee that we have an opportunity for every child who wants to go on to college to get a good education at a reasonable price right here in Wisconsin. So, you know, I'm excited about the prospects of us continuing the reforms that we've put forward, but I also want to do it in a way that continues to bring Wisconsin together, having the discussions that we do, and sometimes they're partisan, sometimes they're bipartisan. But I certainly think that Wisconsin is better off today than it was 5 years ago, and I know it'll be better off 5 years from now than it is today.
Republican Robin Voss is Speaker of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Wisconsin Public Radio's Hope Kerwin spoke with Voss and Senate Minority Leader Democrat Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse about the recently concluded fall legislative session. Coming up, we'll get the perspective of a longtime political scientist, Joe Heim, from UW La Crosse. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm John Gatto. We've just heard two takes on the outcomes of this year's Wisconsin legislative session from members of the legislature's leadership. Here to put some of the new legislation and reforms in a broader perspective is UW La Crosse political scientist Joe Heim. He told Newsmakers senior producer John Davis that many of the changes lawmakers made in the fall session, decisions largely made by the Republican majority, move the state away from its progressive directions of the past.
You know, you're talking about changes in the John Doe system, which has been in the state for decades, changes in campaign finance reforms that have been around for decades, and, of course, the Government Accountability Board, which I think has actually only been in existence since about 2007.
Refresh our memories why that was started in the first place.
Well, you go back prior to the Government Accountability Board, we had two separate commissions or committees that handled them. One was an ethics committee, which I think generally worked okay. And then there was a second group dealing with campaign finances and campaigns composed of three Democrats and three Republicans. And you might not be surprised to find out that they would deadlock pretty regularly. The result is they had very few investigations of anybody because generally the investigations would be directed at one side or the other, or one side or the other would think that they're more or less favored by the direction. That, if you look back at that period, it turned out that we ended up with what is referred to as the caucus scandal. And that resulted in several legislators going to jail, felonies, abuses of power, abuses of staffers. You had people basically getting paid on the taxpayers' dollar who were in fact working for partisan purposes. So it was a major scandal, and it wasn't just one or two people, it was quite a few people. As a result of that, both Democrats and Republicans felt pressured to clean up that whole thing, and they did. They created a Government Accountability Board composed of retired judges, six of them, and the staff, which of course is selected by the Government Accountability Board. The selection of those judges, by the way, judges are nonpartisan, although if you go back far enough, most judges have some a little bit of partisan background, former prosecutors that might have been Democrats or Republicans. The governor of the state of Wisconsin gets to pick those people. Now, there's a panel that puts together names, and then from that, those panelists, he gets to pick the judges. It turns out that of the six judges that were selected by Governor Walker, by the way, mostly, except for one person, he picked people who had Republican backgrounds. So what you have is a Government Accountability Board established to clean up politics, clean up government, make it more honest and essentially nonpartisan. Unfortunately, and by the way, you could argue that these people actually would lean Republican because that was their political background. Well, unfortunately for them, they partly resulted in investigations which were more directed at Republicans and Democrats. So the Republicans cried foul that they were very partisan and they were, in fact, going after Republicans, including the governor. They basically supported two different John Doe investigations in the state of Wisconsin. And to make a long story short, some of their staff people, I think you have to acknowledge at least one person, I won't mention any names, but the executive director of the group gave the appearance at some time of being more partisan, more supportive of Democrats. But the judges themselves basically were neutral, and I think it was about as clean a system as you could possibly imagine. Their downfall, of course, is that they were investigating Republican wrongdoings of some sort. And that has caused the Republican-dominated legislature to make sure that doesn't happen again.
So what are we left with this new system that has been approved?
We're going back to the old way.
We're going back to the old
way. Yeah, pretty much going back to the old way. I will tell you that I read a lot of newspapers, John. And I did not. One of the legislators put together a list of all the state editorial boards arguing across the board not to do anything with the Government Accountability Board because it's about as good a model as you can possibly imagine. That clearly did not have any impact on our legislature. And the partisan legislature basically voted yesterday and finished changing the Government Accountability Board back to the way it used to be, arguing that it was a failed experiment, that there was too much power, it was too partisan. And the fact is they just weren't happy. To me, it looked like a version of payback. You're going to investigate us, and by God, we're going to get rid of you. And that's pretty much what the editorial boards across the entire state of Wisconsin thought. Unfortunately, apparently the legislatures don't feel they have to pay any attention to public opinion and what's good for the state of Wisconsin and democracy.
What if there is wrongdoing? I don't care what party you're talking about. How are we going to be able to get to the truth with some of these politicians?
There still will be investigations. For example, the Government Accountability Board still will be able to investigate wrongdoing. The problem, however, is in order for them to fund the investigation, they will have to go to the legislature and ask for the money. And of course, what party is going to vote to fund an investigation of themselves? So, I mean, you've got a trap here, basically. The John Doe was a particular type of grand jury system. The politicians have exempted themselves from John Doe investigations because they were going after the John Doe 1 and 2. They didn't like the results of those. It does not exempt them from wrongdoing, however. In other words, district attorneys and others can still investigate, including the federal government, by the way. So the investigations could happen. It's just going to be the old way.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We're trying to put the work of the Wisconsin legislature into some perspective with UW La Crosse political scientist Joe Heim. Doesn't this benefit Democrats when they are in power and could be the subject of more investigations, or when they either hand out come fundraising time, it'll be nice to be able to get more money?
Yeah.
You know, they're both playing under the same rules, both parties are.
Yeah, they certainly are. The one difference, perhaps, in terms of money, and this, again, sounds a little bit partisan, but I think Citizens United essentially said that both corporations and unions could essentially give almost unlimited funds into campaigns. The problem for the Democrats, however, is that unions have been on the decline for years in the United States. And throw in the fact that the increased number of Republican states have passed right-to-work laws, which disadvantage unions. State of Wisconsin, we had Act 10, which disadvantaged public sector unions, all of which undercut a major source of revenue for the Democrats. Corporations have not been undercut, but unions clearly have. The effect is, and I think this is pretty natural, businesses tend to support Republicans. So they have a distinct advantage in this current environment with fundraising, basically. You know, the amongst the things that the legislature changed was campaign finance rules in the state of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I did not hear this on the streets, but maybe thousands of people were asking the legislature to double the amounts of money that they could give to candidates. Assembly went from 500 limit, I think, to 1,000. I think it's Senate went from 1,000 to 2,000. Instead of giving 10,000 to the governor, you can now give 20,000. There were just thousands of people out there just begging for this major change. Well, you can kind of figure out what this is all about. It has to do with fundraising and campaigning against your opponent. And if you can raise more money than the other side, your chances of winning are that much better.
UW La Crosse political scientist Joe Heim, he spoke with Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis about the work of the Wisconsin legislature in the recently concluded fall session. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. The Newsmakers production team this week included Hope Kerwin and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share your comments or suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff, that and more, at wpr.org/newsmakers.